There's a reason why the words hard drinking and newspaper man go together so well. Neil Steinberg thought his life was practically perfect. He was happily married to a smart, sassy lawyer. They had two young sons whom they adored. Neil was a popular columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times and had the routine of commuting to his house in the suburbs down pat. Until one day, it all blew up in his face. He tells the story in a book called Drunkard, A Hard-Drinking Life. Oddly enough, Steinberg says he never realized just how much booze he was going through in an average day.
I didn't really measure it. You know, they say it's a disease of denial, and you try not to pay attention to it. I don't know, on an average day, I'd have a few drinks at lunch. I might pop out in the afternoon. I'd catch something on the way to the train. I'd catch something on the train. I mean, there was no average day. I wasn't one of those guys who was under a trestle drinking a quart of alcohol every day. I had a job. I had kids. I wrote books. I wrote things. It's sort of something I did on the sly between one place and another.
The way you write about it makes it sound as though you really enjoyed.
Oh, I loved it. I mean, it was a passion of mine. And I've had people tell me it's the first recovery memoir that makes you want to drink. And I think because I wrote it while it was going on. You know, this was something, it was a sensual pleasure. You know, there are lots of people who enjoy wine and enjoy booze, and I was one of them. And it sort of just crept up on me. I mean, part of the book is I'm going through my life trying to figure out, when did this become an obligation? When did this become, and I really can't figure it out. It went from something I did to something I liked to do to something I loved to do to something I had to do.
You know, it's funny, your business, too, sort of is connected to this. There's a whole history of hard-drinking newspapermen. I don't know. Was drinking part of being a successful big city columnist?
Oh, sure. There was. It was the, you know, the pot of booze at the end of the rainbow. You got through a day. You did something horrible. You stood in the morgue watching people's heads be cut open and their brains weighed, and then you went and had a bunch of drinks afterwards to decompress from it. Now, it definitely was. And on election night, you go to the Goat, and there'd be 200 people there, and Mike Royko in the corner having his vodka tonics, and it was just this one happy, lubricated sort of thing. And where I was densest was I really didn't quite figure out that the party had ended.
Well, the crisis in the book, and we got to talk about it sooner or later.
Of course.
And it has to have been hard for you to talk about this. There was a really bad night.
Yeah, and I wrote it awful. I mean, some people read that scene and they hate the book and they hate me and they don't care about anything else.
Well,
and
what happened?
And, you know, I came home from a long day of drinking, and I get in bed, and I've made it through the day, and my wife basically throws me out of bed, and we have this altercation, and I slap her. Then I go to jail. And so the book starts with me in jail. And the odd thing is that there are people in Chicago, I've been writing for 25 years for the Sun-Times, who hate me for something I wrote about the Pope 10 years ago or something. So in their minds, I'm a wife beater now. Okay. And the odd thing, it had never happened before, it never happened since, which sounds like I'm minimizing it again. And I'm not. I'm just saying it's a tale about drinking, that this incident was the unacceptable thing which pushed me into rehab.
Well, in fact, you'd written earlier, hadn't you, that if you ever tried to hit her, you'd
draw back a bloody stump. Yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the downsides of them. And my wife's a lawyer, and she's this fiercely independent, fiercely determined, you know, proud person. And it was horrible for her to be portrayed in the media as a battered woman. On the other hand, it was something that, as I said, I'm certainly not proud of it. But on the other hand, when I wrote the book, you know, she read it and she had a chance to have input into it. And the one thing she did do is she made the fight even worse than it was, because, you know, she was the sober one at the time, so she had a more clear account of it. People talk about the book as being brutally honest, and I don't really view it like that. I open it with that quote, you know, why not say what happened? And that's my attitude towards it. I, as a writer, I've always felt that if you're not trying to look good, then you can do some really interesting things and you can write some things. So I've never been somebody who's trying to puff himself up.
Well, let's just follow the story through for a little bit, because the essence of it is that you hit your wife. She called the police.
Right.
And you were thrown in jail.
I was thrown in jail, spent the night in jail, and then the next day I'm out in court, and the judge says, well, you can go to rehab in the Cook County Jail, and they have a fine one, or you can go to rehab on your own outside. And I thought about that for a second, and I took the rehab outside. And I think that's one of the things I'm most proud about with the book, is that we, you know, I like to write about obscure things. In one of my books, I have a chapter on the National Spelling Bee. And so this is a book that says what happens in rehab. We always hear about rehab. Lindsay Lohan is in rehab. But we don't know what rehab is. And so I try to show that. And to me, rehab was awful. It wasn't this soft, gauzy thing that people make fun of. It was the autopsy of someone you love. because this was something I really liked and planned to do every day for the rest of my life. And this was teaching me why that was bad, why I was deluded, and why I couldn't do it anymore.
And this was 28 days, which doesn't sound like very long, but for somebody going without a drink for the first time,
it's an eternity. You know, I wasn't going to work. I certainly wasn't you know, doing my own routines. The thing which I'm proud of is that I decide, you know, some people, they drink during rehab, and there were plenty of people thrown out during the program because they showed up to rehab drunk. And I said, well, look, I have to do this. I'm always an opportunist writer, opportunist kind of writer. I find myself in a situation and I go, well, let's write about this. And so the reason I wrote the book was I thought, when I found myself in rehab, I thought, well, let's try this. You always hear about this. Let's go into it sincerely and see what it does.
So no drinking, nothing at all.
Yeah, the first few months, yeah, I didn't drink at all. Because, yeah, I viewed it, and that was really the big epiphany in the book. I viewed it as something that my wife was imposing on me. You know, I have a wife, I got two young kids. The choice seemed to be move to the Red Roof Inn, continue to drink, or stay home and try to be sober. And as much of a lush as I was and am, I didn't really want to be that guy and move to the Red Roof Inn and see my kids on every other Tuesday. And so I could stand on the billy goat and drink myself to death. That didn't seem the path of the champion.
On the other hand, it isn't an absolute yes or no, because you had arguments with her about whether there would be, for instance, that bottle of cognac that...
Oh, yeah, the bottle of Scapa, yeah, 1960 Scapa. I had this bottle that I bought 15 years ago of a single malt scotch from the year I was born, and her initial, you know, immediate reaction was, we're going to sell this on eBay. And for some very strange reason, I wanted to keep that. And to this day, I have a hard time understanding either it represents some sort of futile hope that I'm going to go back to what I consider normal one fine day, or it's some sort of symbol. I mean, I haven't opened the thing for 20 years, so it's not like I'm really looking forward to savoring it.
Of
course, it's still in the basement.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, as you say, there is no scientific program for ending the drinking life. But AA seems to work.
AA does. I mean, I compare it in the book to Churchill's line about democracy, that it's the worst system available except for all the others. And that's kind of AA. It's the least. I mean, think about it. Here's this supposedly genetic, biological brain disorder. People are fairly clear about that. And how do you cure it? Well, you gather together and you have you rely upon God and you rely upon the company of your AA friends. And those are the two things I was most armored against. I never believed in God for a second in my life. And I'm probably the most antisocial person I know. I remember being a child and people would come to my front door to want to play kickball. And I'd turn to my mother. I'd say, Mom, the guys are here. I got to go out and play with them. But wait 20 minutes and call me back in. Because I wanted to be, that inn was where I wanted to be. And so, I mean, part of the book is I'm going through this and I'm thinking, you know, here I am. I've decided to put my all to it. I'm trying my best. And I'm in this basement with these guys, you know, who are not exactly the people I'd pick to be. I mean, I'm a unhumble, superior feeling kind of person. And it was a blow to my ego to go through this, but one that I went through and I think helped me. Because, what AA tries to teach you is that, you know, let's put your will on hold for a minute. Your will is what got you here. And why don't you try to either to listen to other people, to put your faith in something bigger than yourself? I mean, there's a lot of good things that it does.
I can see this, and especially the talking with other people. I mean, it doesn't sound as though it ought to work, but it's a very powerful tool. What I'm curious about, and I never did get from reading the book exactly how you dealt with it, is the essence of AA is this higher power thing. You're Jewish, but it doesn't sound as though accepting a higher power is easy or even possible for you, but somehow...
This is the metaphor I came up with. Let's say you're in a car accident and you're burned, and the helicopter, the medevac, shows up from Loyola University Medical Center here in Maywood, which is this fabulous burn unit, and they're going to fly you off to be treated there. You don't prop yourself up on one charred elbow and start to complain about your problems with the Pope, right? You just go and you do it, and you forget the fact that it's a Catholic hospital. And that's kind of like AA. They have all this God stuff. To me, it's unfortunate because it never factored into my sobriety. I kept waiting for God to show up and help me, and he just didn't. And I wasn't believing in the proper way. people said, but whatever it was, he never became it, the ineffable universe power never came and helped me. But here are these people who are getting together in church basements and talking about alcoholism and their problems. And where else do you do that? I mean, you can go to a hospital and pay someone to do that. You can hire a therapist, which I also did, which helped. I mean, you want to talk about this. When you're forced to give up drinking and it's something you love and you don't want to give it up, I had this bottomless need to babble about it to people. And I would go from one person to the other and sort of try to discuss this because you're in this box and I'm a smart guy and I'm trying to figure out how to get out of the box.
And these are the people who understand. I mean, there's hardly anybody in AA who doesn't like drinking, is there?
And they've been there, and they've found something to replace. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. People who haven't read the book think I'm criticizing the program, and it's really a church, and hundreds of millions of people, if not billions of people, have had their lives enriched by church, and they embrace Jesus, and it makes them do good things. I'm not one of those guys, and so in a sense, I had a tougher road because I had to find reasons not to drink that didn't involve the ultimate power of the universe giving me a big wink and a thumbs up.
It's nice to have the drunkard in the past, isn't it?
I'm hoping it is. I mean, you can't be too confidence is bad in this. I mean, if I came in and said, yep, fix that, problem done, never drinking again. I mean, you see people like that in the program, and they end up or oftentimes or sometimes fail because then your guard gets dropped down and you go from this isn't a problem anymore to it's not a problem anymore, I can drink again. I was concerned about my kids. You know, I have two boys, Ross and Kent, 12 and 11, and they're in the book. And I ran into my brother-in-law at a party. This is early when I was writing. He said, oh, what's your new book about? And I said, oh, it's a recovery memoir. And he looked at me, and he's kind of a tart individual. He said, oh, your boys will be so proud. And I thought, yeah. As a matter of fact, I think, I think they may be proud because they're going to see what I went through. And this is a nightmarish ordeal for people. I mean, one thing I'm glad about the book is it sort of explained to my wife what was going on because she, like many relatives or loved ones of alcoholics, figured I drank because I'm a jerk. Okay. And that might have been an element, especially early on. But at some point, you stop drinking because you're a jerk and you drink because you have to because it's this horrific compulsion that's ruining your life. That's why the booze is so alluring in the book is because it is alluring to you. You love it. You adore it. It's your focus and your heart and your passion, and it's this huge part of your life. It seems like you're getting rid of yourself. Okay, you're not pulling yourself away from booze. You're removing your soul along with booze and throwing it out, and you're becoming this shell sleepwalking, this surviving shell. I think that's where the spirituality is so appealing to so many people is because it gives them something to remember. I mean, people go to AA twice a day sometimes, and there's nothing wrong with that. I read a lot, and I write, and I work, and I raise tomatoes.
Neil Steinberg writes for the Chicago Sun-Times. His memoir is Drunkard. A Hard Drinking Life.